Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're going to read this morning texts 10 through 15 of Canto 3, Chapter 26. This is Lord Kapila Dev speaking. To Devahuti. What was Devahuti's question? Devahuti's question was that she wanted to. Devahuti's question was, you've described the relationship between the living entity and matter. Please describe the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His energy, which are both matter and spirit. What's the role of the Personality of Godhead in creating illusion? So these six verses that we're discussing this morning are presenting the picture of Pradhan, the unmanifested, undifferentiated sum total of the material elements, and in their unmanifested state, nonetheless, the elements are there and it breaks them down because they go from the unmanifest to the manifest, and the agent of that is the Supreme Lord. It's His energy, and He moves them from an unmanifest to a manifest state. That's the topic this morning. So he begins. Kapilade begins his response to her question by explaining first the unmanifest state, Pradhan. Universe, the unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes is the cause of the manifest state and is called Pradhan. So Pradhan, material nature is the cause of so many things, and Pradhan is the cause of material nature. The unmanifest is the cause of the manifest. And then there's the remote cause, or ultimate cause, the cause of all causes, the Supreme Lord. It is called Prakriti when in the manifested state of existence. So now we're hearing this differentiation. Unmanifested, Pradhan. Undifferentiated, Pradhan. Dormant state, Pradhan. Manifest, Prakriti. Differentiated, Prakriti. Modes of material nature, Prakriti. The elements, all the different components, are there in the unmanifested state, simply they're unmanifested. The modes of material nature are also there but dormant and become activated when the living entity and time are introduced. Pradhan is there. Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, and then the modes of nature become stirred or agitated by the contact of the living entity with Pradhan. In the Pradhan state, they're dormant. They're not zero. They're dormant. When the living entity is introduced and time energy is introduced, they become activated. And the elements start differentiating. And in the purport, we find a set of definitions. What is Pradhan? What is time? What is Mahatattva or Prakriti? They seem to be used interchangeably. The manifest state is called Prakriti. The manifest state is also called Mahatattva. Okay, so here goes. The Lord points out, purport, the Lord points out material nature in its subtle state, which is called Pradhan, and he analyzes this Pradhan. The explanation of Pradhan and Prakriti is, Pradhan is the subtle, undifferentiated sum total of all material elements. That's the consistent explanation of what Pradhan is. Subtle, undifferentiated, sum total of all material elements. Further down, there's another little sutra-like definition of what Pradhan is. When the cause and effect are not clearly manifested or avyakta. Avyakta? No meaning? Avyakta? That's a yes or no? No? Okay. Avyakta means not manifested. Vyakta means manifested. Dormant is not manifested. Active is manifested. So the sum total of the material ingredients not manifested. And they're, in this case it's saying, in their various roles of cause and effect. Because there's nothing happening. There's no effect. So there's no apparent cause of a no apparent effect. So cause and effect are not activated, it's unmanifested, avyakta. So when that condition exists, the reaction of the total elements does not take place. And that state is called Pradhan. Since that's some statement of what Pradhan is, then good definition is both inclusive, that's what something is, and exclusive, what something isn't. So he says that the impersonalists have this impersonalists say that Brahman has similar seeming qualities. It's undifferentiated. It's without variety. So maybe Brahman is Pradhan, Pradhan is Brahman. So Prabhupada says, no, that's not possible, because Brahman, within Brahman, there's no modes of nature. And within Pradhan, in a dormant state, the modes of nature are there. So they're distinct. This is something like Madhvacharya. Yeah, Madhvacharya. Madhva's making distinctions. Brahman, no modes of nature. Pradhan, also unmanifested and undifferentiated, but the modes of nature are there dormant. Distinction. That's one. Pradhan is not the time element. Why not? Because within the time element, there's actions and reactions, creation and annihilation. And Pradhan is a resting state, non-manifested state. There's no creation going on, no destruction going on, no actions and reactions, no causes and effects. So it's not time. Pradhan is also not the living entity. This is analyzing tattvas, because going back at the very beginning of this chapter, Kapila Dev declared, I'm going to describe different tattvas to make up the absolute truth. So here's a, this tattva is different than that one. Time energy is not the same as Pradhan. Nor is the jiva, or the marginal potency, the same as Pradhan, or the conditioned state, liberated or conditioned state, the living entity is not Pradhan. Because the designations, at least in the conditioned state, the designations of the living entities are not eternal. And Pradhan is eternal. The sum total of material energy is eternal. Sometimes in this state, sometimes in that state, but eternal. One adjective used in this connection in the verse is nitya, which indicates eternality. Therefore, the condition of material nature immediately previous to its manifestation is called Pradhan. Unmanifest, Pradhan. Immediately following is the manifest state, Prakriti or Mahatattva. Okay? So that's a definition verse. Then the next is describing, although not differentiated in a manifest condition, there within Pradhan there are different elements. Maybe this is a way to think of it. Milk has different elements. Technically, I'm not a scientist, but it's called a colloidal suspension. Mm-hmm. And you can separate out that which is suspended from that which is in which it is suspended. There's a process for doing that. So, although milk is this white, liquidy substance, there's some solid elements within the white liquidy substance. And so then you can describe what's within the milk. There's calcium and there's this and there's that, there's things within the milk. Although it's just a liquid, undifferentiated, apparently. So, not exactly like that, but something like that. Pradhan has its components, although undifferentiated. And here's what they are. The aggregate elements are known as pradhan. The aggregate elements are listed. 5 gross material elements, 5 subtle elements, 4 internal senses, 5 senses for gathering knowledge, and 5 outward organs of action. These, the aggregate elements, are known as the pradhan. Again, they're not differentiated yet, but we know that they're there. And then, the verses that follow this one are going to spell out what's the 5, what's the 5, what's the 4, what's the this, and what's the that. Make sure it breaks them down. It's Sankhya. It's analysis of the components of matter, and then aside from that, the realm of spirit and the distinctions within the realm of spirit. So in the purport, Prabhupada refers to the Bhagavad Gita. And he writes, according to Bhagavad Gita, the sum total of the 24 elements described herein is called Yonir Mahad Brahma. Where is that in Bhagavad Gita? Where is it? Chapter 14. Etad Yonir Mahad Brahma. Crow wants to come to the Bhagavatam class. Well, beginning of the chapter. Yeah. Text 4, chapter 14. Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasmat brahma mahadyonir aham bija patakita. It should be understood that all species of life, the son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature. Mahadyoni is translated as the source of birth in the material substance. Mahad Brahma. He writes, the sum total of the living entities is impregnated into this Yonir Mahad Brahma, and they are born in different forms, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, the sum total of the 24 elements for God is also described as Yonir Mahad Brahma. It is the source of the birth and subsistence of all living entities. All living entities in this case means the embodied living entities, not the souls. The various species, forms of embodiment are generated from the yoni, the womb of the total material substance, specifically Pradhan, because that's where the glance of Mahavishnu goes upon Pradhan. So it serves as a birthplace, as a womb serves as a birthplace. And it supplies ingredients. This is a little more technically described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there are two divisions of Maya called Upadan Maya and Nimitta Maya, where as a material nature has these two functions. It just mentioned. It's a place and it supplies ingredients. Comparison is explicitly made to the womb of a mother, where the womb is both a place where the living entity grows and the ingredients are supplied so the body of that living entity can grow. These are similarly back, there's two aspects of Maya, the two aspects of the general nature. It's the chamber, or the place in which producing of things, producing of cosmoses and bodies and species and things, from within Pradhan, and the ingredients are supplied. There's a space and the ingredients supplying. And there's more technical terms for those. So, and then there's the remote cause. Wombs of mothers don't just go producing species or offspring. And it requires impregnation. And similarly, material nature doesn't just start producing things. It requires the touch of spirit. The touch of spirit in the form of soul, and then the father that imparts the soul, implants or impregnates the soul. I'll read the sentence again. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, sum total of 24 elements Pradhan is also described as Yonir Mahad Brahma. It is the source of the birth and subsistence of all living entities. So the next verses are breaking down with the five gross elements. We know them from Bhagavad Gita: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Five subtle elements. Usually it's spoken differently. It's the objects of the senses. Smell, taste, color, touch, and sound. The objects of the senses. But here it's subtle elements. Then five knowledge acquiring senses and five organs for action or working senses. So they're listed. So first the knowledge acquiring, the auditory sense, the sense of taste, tactile sense, sense of sight, and sense of smell. and then the working senses. Speech, the active organs for working, those for traveling, generating, and evacuating. The organs for traveling means the legs. Vak, the organ of speech. Karau, two hands. So speech, hands, legs, genital, and evacuating. Working senses. Five working, five knowledge acquiring senses. So we now have 20. Five gross elements, five subtle elements, five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses. We have four more to go. And text 14 says, the internal subtle senses are experienced as having four aspects: mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. Usually the word is chaita, here it's chitta. Close. Distinctions between them can be made only by different functions, since they represent different characteristics. Purport. The four internal senses or subtle senses described herein are defined by different characteristics. When pure consciousness is polluted by material contamination, and when identification with the body becomes prominent, one is said to be situated under false ego. Consciousness is the function of the soul, and therefore behind consciousness there is soul. Consciousness polluted by material contamination is called ahankara, false ego. And the concluding verse for this morning, text 15. All these are considered the qualified Brahman. Although according to impersonalists, there's no qualities in Brahman. And in the undifferentiated Brahman, there's no qualities, just Sat. But Mahad Brahma, or qualified Brahman, Pradhan, is distinct. The mixing element, which is known as time, is counted as the 25th element. There's different ways of looking at the Samkhya system, but sometimes it's described like that. And here, Kapila Dev presenting it is, when the time energy enters, then things start to happen. Before the time energy enters, things don't happen. It's just sitting there, like a big blob. Undifferentiated blob. And time energy enters, and then things start happening. Purport. According to the Vedic version, there is no existence beyond Brahman, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, for example. It is stated also in the Vishnu Purana that whatever we see is Parasha Brahmana Shaktihi. Everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Brahman. When Brahman is mixed with the three qualities, good, dispassion, and ignorance, there results the material expansion, which is sometimes called Saguna Brahman, and which consists of these 25 elements. In the Nirguna Brahman, where there is no material contamination, or in the spiritual world, the three modes, good, dispassion, and ignorance, are not present. Where Nirguna Brahman is found, simple unalloyed goodness prevails. Saguna Brahman is described by the Sankhya system of philosophy as consisting of 25 elements, including the time factor and the purport, the past, present, future. And the opening line is, there's nothing beyond that. There's Saguna Brahman, Nirguna Brahman, there's nothing else. There's matter, there's spirit, and the controller of them, who is also Nirguna Brahman. But the Bhagavan teacher of that commonly, when Prabhupada would speak of Nirguna, Saguna, the statements are, according to one perspective, it means one thing. According to another perspective, it means another thing. One perspective is that it has Nirguna. Nirguna means that Krishna has no material qualities. And Saguna means that Krishna has spiritual qualities. That's commonly how we hear those two terms being spoken about. Here it's spoken about in a different way. From a Sankhya perspective, Saguna means this Mahabrahma, where there's 25 elements, and Nirguna is the position where there are no modes of nature, there are no material modes of nature, and therefore, there's no elements, there's no time. There's eternal time. There's no time as we know it, but there's eternal time. I was just in Hyderabad, and they're building a guest house. And each morning a big truck comes and unloads all these supplies. You know, there's some bricks and there's some steel and there's some this and there's some that. And you get a guest house. Over a long period of time. So before the big truck arrives, there's just a barren land. And then they dig a hole and foundation and some ingredients. So, what Kapila Deva is doing is he's laying out like the truck that says here's the steel and here's the bricks and here's the slabs of marble. Here's the building blocks for material creation. And it's assembled by Lord Brahma and the personalities who assist him. So the question that was asked is, what's the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his energies? So he's laying out here the various energies, and by the plan of the Lord and his infusing of creative potency into Lord Brahma, it's assembled and you get a guest house. Mm-hmm. Or a prison house in the material world. So it's the elements. And then the relationship. Material energies and the relationship with the source of them. Both how they come into being and then how they continue to sustain that which is created. So that's Sankhya. And maybe some people aren't interested in it, but some people certainly are interested in, the scientists are certainly interested in describing how material nature just does it on its own. And they're very happy to by doing so show there's no need for God in the picture. Mechanistic science, which is highly motivated to eliminate God from the picture, saying that this God notion is for weak-minded people, but we're not weak-minded, we know what's going on. And what's going on is what's going on. Just ask us, because we're scientists, we know. We'll tell you what's going on. There's no God in the picture. We can explain everything without the silly notion of God in the picture. So, some people are interested in that. And similarly, for those with the capacity to understand all these details, here's how it happens. Devahuti is asking, and so we're just hearing how it all, the building blocks and how it all puts together. Making bodies and species and planets and oceans and so forth. The whole thing. All the very beauties of creation. Okay, so I'm getting on there. Any discussion on this?
Yeah? So that the Supreme is a part of all things, of all manifestations. So they also told that material laws cannot be broken. So, in this way we are working in environment, you see that the many people are doing their blessing, working in the environment, doing things which are not different. So, how does the way of reacting? Many people are surrounding, are breaking the laws, so nothing is happening to them.
You're speaking now of breaking material laws or breaking spiritual laws? The laws of the government? The laws of the state? Okay. Well, there's consequences. I mean, to say that the laws of nature are infallible, it's like that there's a BBT publication called Infallible Justice. That's the infallibility. They can't be broken and you get away with it. The example I was giving about once you make certain decisions, supposing I make a decision to steal, or the other example I gave you, suppose you make a decision to jump out a window. The laws are infallible. Once you jump, you can't, I changed my mind. Once you steal, you can steal. That's sinful, but you can steal. But the retribution for that is infallible. Even if the state doesn't catch you, the material nature laws are infallible. In that sense, I have free will. Otherwise, if I couldn't choose to steal or not steal or jump or not jump, then I'd have no free will. But once I jump, or once I steal, it's infallible. That sense. Okay? Alright. Anything else? Okay. See the bell. Oh, yes. Yes.
What are the qualities, spiritual qualities, how do they, what energy are they?
For the living entity or for Krishna?
For the living
entity. They are covered and manifested in a, in the conditioned state, they're covered and manifested in a perverted way. But when purification is through the agency of contaminated consciousness and everything else, so when consciousness is purified, or our original consciousness is awakened, then our original spiritual qualities are restored. It's an example that Prabhupada has given is a diamond that's covered. But you remove the mud or whatever the covering is, and the sparkle is there because it's the natural quality of the diamond. So spiritual qualities of the living entity become restored naturally as Krishna consciousness awakens. Okay? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.